Hello and welcome to Dual Citizens. My name is David Auld, and look, it's Mono Citizens today. Unfortunately, Steve is down with the dreaded lurgy. He's somewhere in a bed, I think, suffering from the flu. We told him to take it easy, and I get to be all by myself, and you get to be all by yourself with me. What are we talking about? Well, not a lot has happened since we last recorded Dual Citizens. Only former President Trump almost getting shot, only Biden dropping out of the race for president in the United States. That's all that's happened since then. We might chat about that a little bit here on Dual Citizens. So, former President Trump and he hopes next President Trump almost got shot. And I don't know what you made of all of that, whether you were hooked to your screens like I was or just didn't bear any thought at all. But of course, it has been almost all that many people have been talking about. And so we probably want to address it again here on Dual Citizens. Yes, we did a whole Trump element just a while ago, but gosh, this is big news. What I want to do is reflect with you on some of the things that have been said around that incident and just go, how do we think about those as Christians? Here's the first thing. Did God save Trump? Now, of course, he stands up, doesn't he, at the Republican National Convention and says, you know, God was on my side, God saved me. And that got a bit of a response from a number of people, including, of course, Joy Behar, famously on The View. She said that was un-Christian, self-centered of Trump. Here's a clip of her saying just that.
One thing, I'm speaking to fellow Christians. I was raised Catholic. I'm a Christian girl. When something like this happens to you, like this assassination attempt, and you say something like, God is watching, was watching me, that is a very unchristian thing to say because it's very narcissistic. What about...
Now, is it unchristian? Is it self-centered of Trump to be speaking with that sort of language? Well, of course, in one sense, let's go, yeah, of course it is. This is Trump. I mean, he's the narcissist, isn't he? It's always all about him. I hope you don't believe a word that he says when he talks about himself being a strong, staunch Christian. You know, when he holds his Bible up in front of that church years ago, we all know what's going on. It's just grandstanding. Here's a man who there is no evidence in his life that he's been regenerate, is there? None whatsoever. So in one sense, you want to go, yes, it's just Trump being Trump. But is it possible that God could have saved him? Well, I want to go, well, of course it is. And not least because all things are in God's sovereignty, aren't they? The Proverbs teaches, I'm going to read from my notes, Proverbs 19, verse 21. Many are the plans in the mind of a man, including a young man who wants to shoot a presidential candidate. But it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. So in one sense, you want to argue, of course, God saved Trump. He's sovereign over all things. Does that mean that Trump is somehow good? And of course, that's Behar's mistake, isn't it? Behar goes, well, this is Trump saying, I'm so special that God saved me. Well, we'll think about that in a moment, because it's actually probably the opposite, isn't it? Don't worry about Trump, Joy. I mean, let's read some more from Proverbs. Proverbs 16:5. Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured, he will not go unpunished. If I wanted to read something to Trump at any point, it might be something like that for him to listen to. Has this event humbled Trump? I'm not sure that it has. I mean, we see some sense of good political discipline from him, but he's been doing that anyway. Yeah. Was he saved? Well, I want to go, yes, if God saved Trump, and I'm more than happy to agree that he did, because he's sovereign over all things, it's not so much that he saved Trump, is it? It's that he saved the United States and the rest of us from what could have just been an awful moment. You cannot work hard enough to understand the division that there exists in the United States at the moment. I don't think we get it anywhere else, even in the West. We think we do, but I speak to my friends there, and it is just a horribly divided country. It's interesting, isn't it? When Trump gets up from the stage, surrounded by those Secret Service agents, and he's ready to go, what does he do? He instinctively raises his hand and goes, fight, 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 because he actually thinks he's in a battle and that this is part of it. And more than that, here's the point. There are millions and millions and millions of Americans who also think that they're in a battle And they see Trump as the only guy who's fighting for them. I mean, one of the things that conservatives have got to get their head around is if you think Trump is an awful candidate, that is to say, morally objectionable, and I think that's a fair argument you could make, the question you've got to go is, well, who will fight for these people? Who's standing up, making them feel at least there's someone on my side? It's really interesting, as you think about Trump, and we said this before the last time, as you think about Trump, you've got to understand why people support him. Now, what might have happened if he'd been shot? I mean, you like to think, don't you, that more sensible heads would have prevailed. Calm, reasoned, rational people on the conservative right would have prevailed. But the reality is, we don't know. So truly, I want to go, God saved him and saved America, and perhaps saved us from an utter mess. Not because Trump was good, because of course you've got to apply your gospel lens to all of this. You've got to understand that when God saves any of us from anything, it's not because of who we are, it's despite ourselves. This is the mistake Job's friends make, don't they, in the Bible, in Job. They come to him and they say, well, look, Job, yes, we know that you say you're righteous, but you must have done something wrong for you to be treated in this way. They think there's a direct cause and effect between God's favor and our behavior. But actually, it's the opposite. There's a great scene in Shakespeare's Hamlet. Let's be cultured for a minute. I'm sure Trump hasn't read Hamlet either, let alone the Bible. Hamlet, Act 2, Scene 2, the players arrive at the castle. And of course, the players are very important, and Hamlet has his own designs for how he's going to use them in what's going on. But you get this this lovely scene where Hamlet turns to Polonius, who's kind of responsible, like the castellan, responsible for running the castle. And he says to them, good, my lord, will you see the players well bestowed? That is, will you look after them? Do you hear? Let them be well used, you know, take care of them. Polonius responds, my lord, I will use them according to their desert. I'll give them what they deserve. And Hamlet's response is brilliant. I love it. God's bodkin, man. Now, we don't have expressions like that anymore. Oh, that we did. God's bodkin, man. Much better. Use every man after his desert, and who shall scape whipping? Use them after your own honor and dignity. The less they deserve, the more merit is in your bounty. See what he's saying? If we all got what we deserved, we'd all get whipped. No. Treat them according to your own dignity and honor. That is based on who you are towards them, not on who they are. And that, of course, that's the gospel. Shakespeare knows the gospel. It's Romans 5:8, isn't it? God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So let's go back to Joy at the View, and I want to say to her charitably, no, Joy, it is very Christian. It's a very Christian idea for God to save people who don't deserve it. And you and I agree, Trump doesn't deserve it, but then you and I don't deserve it either. But God has been very, very kind. And if we can't allow the gospel to frame what we think Christian things are and understand what the gospel truly is, it's a God who saves people who are hopelessly sinful, just like Trump, just like me, just like Joy, then we don't understand the gospel at all. And that's actually going to help us when we turn to our next topic as we think about just quite how people have responded to Trump getting shot. Well, how did others respond to the news that Trump was almost killed? One famous little event that's just rippled around the internet and beyond is, of course, Jack Black and his band with a guy called Kyle Gass, Tenacious D. They were actually here in Australia on tour, and it was Kyle's birthday. And, well, I'll let this video show you. Here's what happened.
Make a wish, Canada. Don't miss Trump next time.
So yes, you heard that right. He says, don't miss Trump next time. Now, of course, utter furore over that. And not least because in America, they're having this big debate about, well, is our language unhelpful? Is all this, Trump is the next Hitler? You know, the Hitler who in 4 years actually utterly failed to do anything dictatorial and somebody else won the next election. That wasn't what Hitler did. When he won the election, that was it. It was all over. But anyway, big backlash. And Gass ends up saying it was highly inappropriate. It was dangerous and a terrible mistake, as though somehow this were this thing that was out of character out of order for them. Everybody totally surprised. Oh gosh, this isn't me. To which I think any sensible person who knows these guys or has done any reading into them goes, have you read their lyrics? Have you listened to their music? The whole thing is highly inappropriate, dangerous, and I'd go, a terrible mistake. Here's how one wag on Twitter puts it, the brilliantly named Leafy Moogle. Here's what they say, I love this. Tenacious D, a band with a song about killing all the politicians and ruling the world as idiot kings, breaking up because one of them joked about political violence. So he's talking about a song they've got called City Hall, where they complain about, you know, the way that the city is run. And then they go, well, we're going to F that S up. I can't even say the words out on this show. I'm going to start a riot. And the whole point is they're going to do away with kill the leadership and then run the world themselves. And they run through their manifesto. And they are a bit self-aware because they kind of go, oh, we're going to level out, you know, the rich and the poor. And then they kind of go, oh, no, hang on, we've got some money. Maybe we're not so keen on that. Here's my point. When Kyle says what he says, don't miss Trump next time, he's being entirely consistent with everything else that he's done. Right? These are all the songs that he's written. This is what the crowd that has come to that concert want to hear. That's what they're expecting to hear because the lyrics are full of it. And of course, it's not that this was a one-off. This was kind of an inadvertent not me. No. Every pastor, and many of us as well, know, don't we, that it's actually in the unguarded moments, it's in the blurting that we actually find out what people are really, really like. James in the scriptures tells us, doesn't he, very clearly that the tongue just shows me what's going on in the heart. Getting back to the writer of the Proverbs, Proverbs 18:7, a fool's mouth is his ruin and his lips a snare to his soul. It just exposes who we are. Anybody can prepare, like I've done here, a bit of a talk and get it ready for you and script it and put it out. It's the unprepared blurt that really shows you into a man's heart. Now, what's really interesting is if you look at their prepared material, their lyrics, it's pretty much the same anyway. So when Jack Black then gets on Instagram and goes, oh, I was blindsided, I kind of want to go, are you for real? Do you think I'm stupid? This is a guy that you sat down with and wrote stuff about, forgive me for saying this, double-teaming women and effing the S up of City Hall and all the rest of his lyrics. I mean, please go and look them up yourself. I just feel unable to express many of them here on this podcast. Who is he kidding? Like, seriously? What's really interesting, however, is the way that he ditched Gar so quickly. This is the guy who's been going around stadiums all around the world parading this kind of material and happily, proudly doing it. And then all of a sudden, when, I don't know, he gets a call from the DNC or I don't know what, I suddenly realize he's on the wrong side of cancel culture, just ditches him. It's sad, isn't it, however, when you see the people who are from the atmosphere of cancel culture, getting cancelled themselves, hoisted on their own petard. And they have no answer here. There's a sadness to this. There's no glee in my voice. We'll come in a minute again to be applying the gospel to this. It's really, really important. But let's just call this for what it is. They have no answer for this. They bay for blood every time someone says something they don't approve of, seeking to get them cancelled, and all of a sudden they find themselves in that position as well because the Overton window has just shifted and they're just slightly outside it. And wow, it moved real quick, didn't it? It moved real quick. Bethel McGrew, in a recent article, To Cancel or Not to Cancel, has some reflections on this whole culture. And she really is urging the political right, the more conservative people, probably those who are more inclined to watch this podcast, to think again about how they respond to things like this. And she does want to go, have we just reached a point where it's just really all too much? She reflects upon two people who just got caught out on social media, one guy called Corey Comperatore and another guy called Darcy Pinckney, who both said stuff on Facebook or elsewhere and then lost their jobs over it. One crude, one unhinged, as she puts it. Well, listen to what she says. I don't want to make a false equivalence between Cory Contemporatore's crude tweets and Darcy Waldron Pinckney's unhinged Facebook comments, but I think there is an important sense in which Contemporatore and Pinckney share something in common, very different, but a commonality. They both live in a world and age that tempts us to think out loud about everything in public. 30 years ago, nobody but Comperatore's family and drinking buddies would have known what the hell he thought about Russia, the Middle East, or the president. 40 years ago, probably nobody but Darcy Pinckney's husband would have heard her mutter darkly that it was too bad President Reagan didn't catch his bullet in the head, because that's what he said it back then. But in 2024, Cory and Darcy shared all of these thoughts where anyone in the world could see them, and they didn't think twice. It's what everyone does now. After all, it's true, isn't it? We get on social media and we just blurt it out. Or we get on stage in front of thousands of fans who've paid for us to express these kinds of things, and we blurt it all out. And then all of a sudden we find out, oh, that wasn't acceptable, because there's a world beyond the adoring bubble that we're living in. Nevertheless, look, friends, we've got to respond better, haven't we? As we said, the left, they have no framework here. Because they just cancel and there's no hope. But more importantly, they have no framework to deal with this because they can't diagnose the problem. And the problem, of course, is that we've all got sinful hearts. Jesus famously, Mark 7, verse 21, says this, "For from within, out of the heart of man, comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness." It weighs heavy, doesn't it? And here's the thing. You go and look at Tenacious D's lyrics, long-established lyrics, over years of sitting down round tables and going, this would be a great thing to sing out loud. And it gives full voice to their hearts. They were unrestrained by any sense of what we might call propriety or appropriateness. And they found a willing and ready audience. I mean, half their songs have got the line, "Hail Satan," in it. It's like they throw it in at the end just for extra measure. Here's the thing we need to grapple with. I mean, we can look at that and just go, that's appalling, and look, it went too far, and they get what they deserve. Maybe, maybe not. We've got the same hearts, don't we? We've got the same hearts. Jesus is making a general statement about all of mankind. Here's the thing for many of us, there are things that constrain us, however. The first thing that constrains us, which is missing for Jack and Kyle, is moral cultural expectation. Now, I grew up in a lovely upper middle class English household. There were just things you didn't do. And I had what I would call middle class restraint upon my behavior. And I do remember going and getting gradually, as I grew up, exposed to people from other backgrounds and realizing that other people were not anywhere near as restrained as I had grown up and been taught to be. And for most of people in our Western society who kind of behave in a more moral way, who look at Tenacious D and kind of go, oh, that's shocking, I wouldn't want a part of that, that's a lot of what's driving them. And can I just say, it's cultural, it's moralistic. It flows from a Christian heritage because it sets up expectations of how we ought to behave, but it's not itself coming from the gospel changing hearts. The other thing that ultimately changes, of course, is when the gospel itself comes and changes our heart. And the Lord Jesus Christ, by his Spirit, does a remarkable work in us and makes us more like him day by day. And that's what we need. And it comes with the forgiveness of Jesus for the way in which our hearts have led us into doing all sorts of things, which Jack and Kyle model for us, but which we ourselves know is true of ourselves. So here's what I want to say. As you look at Kyle Gass and you look at his cancelling, there's one sense you want to go, well, what were you expecting? You live in this culture. But also we ought to be going, you ought not to be fooling yourself, Kyle. This is exactly who you are. You blurt it out. Don't miss him next time. Because it is what you think, it is what you feel, and it is, I've no doubt, what Jack would have endorsed, and no doubt what the crowd loved. But any analysis I make of him needs to be the same analysis I make of myself. I'm also a sinner with a corrupt, sinful heart. The difference is, we know the goodness of the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ to forgive us, and that's what's so lacking in cancel culture, isn't it? Forgiveness. To forgive us and redeem us and restore us and start to remake us to be more like the Lord Jesus Christ. And if you want to do anything, surely you want to pray that Jack and Kyle and others would know that great goodness. I long it for Kyle, because if he keeps shouting Hail Satan in his heart and on a stage, you wonder if there's no hope for him. And of course, the gospel-minded person, the dual citizen, longs for there to be hope for everybody in the Lord Jesus Christ. Don't lose sight of him. Let his gospel be the lens through which you watch everything. Well, that's it for Dual Citizens this week. Slightly truncated version. No, Steve, we'll be back to the full package, hopefully in 2 weeks' time. See you then. Thanks for watching Dual Citizens. I'm David Old.
And I'm Stephen McAlpine.
If you like what you've watched, please do subscribe. Maybe even just leave a review or some comments. Make sure other people can hear about it as well.
Because we need more friends.
We need lots more friends.
He needs more friends.